From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Today, we'll speak with the Dominican Center's new executive director. Then we hear how a recent high school grad has adjusted to life with COVID-19 in our pandemic reflection series.
There are times where you feel better and times where you don't, and I think that's something that I learned throughout the pandemic, that there's just bad days and good days, and sometimes those bad days really hit hard, and it's a good life lesson, and I think I learned a lot as a human being.
We'll learn about the discovery of a wildflower that hasn't been seen in Wisconsin in over 50 years.
For green violet to be rediscovered at all was a really big deal, but also because it was 200 miles further north than it had been found in the past.
Plus, here's some new local songs in this month's Milwaukee Music Roundup. Lake Effect is next, but first this news. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Thanks for joining us. Marisha Harris was recently named the new executive director at the Dominican Center in the Imani neighborhood. She's a Milwaukee native and knows firsthand the challenges and triumphs in the community. Lake Effect's Mallory Chang spoke with Harris about her goals as their new leader.
Thank you so much, Marisha, for joining me here on Lake Effect. Congratulations on your new role at the Dominican Center. As a Milwaukee native, you grew up in the city, and now your new role as the executive director in Imani's Dominican Center. What are you excited about to start doing?
Well, first, thank you so much, Mallory, for having me. I am just thrilled to be here, to be joining the Imani family and doing the work that is happening. There's so much momentum already in this community and so many amazing things already happening. And so I'm just excited to be able to join and do my part. My initial focus as I start to get acclimated to this role is really just listening and learning. The heart and soul of what we do here at Dominican Center is really grounded in resident engagement and resident leadership. We truly believe that residents are the experts in the neighborhood. We were founded in 1995 by Dominican sisters who really wanted to learn about the women in this community and what they want and what they need. And what they learned when they listened to the women was that there was a need for literacy. Women wanted to read the Bible to their children. They wanted to be able to read and write a grocery list. And so Dominican Center was founded with a focus on adult literacy. Through the years, leadership here at Dominican Center has really focused on that listening and that resident engagement and resident leadership. We've evolved throughout the years in what we do, but at the core is really just listening to what the people in the community want and need. And so I hope to continue that listening because it's truly critical to the work that we do. And I would also add, in addition to listening to the residents, certainly want to acknowledge that there are so many other key stakeholder groups engaged in the work in this community. So from Dominican Center staff, to our board, to our funders and partners, nonprofit organizations, there's so much work that's already happening. And so it's also important for me to listen to all the key stakeholders and hear a variety of perspectives. My hope is that together we can all co-create the goals and the vision for Dominican Center moving forward.
How do you see these areas of working together grow and continue collaboration look like?
So one of the things I learned very quickly when I took on the role was that there is a revitalization plan that residents have taken leadership on working to help develop alongside with Dominican Center and our funders. And so really, we want to center our collaborative efforts around the revitalization plan. So the revitalization plan is pretty in-depth, and I can share with you that we have committees as well. So Imani United serves as our leadership, our resident leadership group, and they are really leading the work and helping build a sense of cohesion in the neighborhood. And so Imani United has officers who are elected and also committee chairs. And so the revitalization plan is focused on a number of things, but certainly looking at education and family well-being, neighborhood safety, and also ambassadors. So identifying residents who can be champions for their block and engaging residents, helping residents understand resources that are available to them and helping them access and navigate those resources. Also housing and economic development. And then Friends of Moody Park. We have a number of different projects, but one I think that is important to highlight is our Block by Block initiative. We've been working with Northwestern Mutual, Amani United, the leadership group, Ezekiel Hope, LISC, Legal Aid Society, Milwaukee Christian Center, and KG Development Group to revitalize an entire block. We offer contractor training to residents at our Amani Training Center, and our first block is nearly complete, which is super exciting. So now we're looking at other locations so that we can work to scale the Block by Block initiative. But I think that is certainly something that is an amazing aspect of the revitalization plan. The work that is happening here in Amani, although it's place-based, really everyone across the city has a place in supporting what we're doing here. And so our hope is to really expand our support base, raise our profile so that we can continue to invite the broader community into the work that's happening.
Marisha, I'm really curious too with being in this role now as an executive director and being from Milwaukee as well, why did you decide, hey, like, I think I want to work at the Dominican Center? What was that thought process like?
I would say I found my passion early in life. Not that I was aware of it, but when I reflect on my life, my passion and my motivation comes from my earliest years. So my family and I, we lived in neighborhoods that are similarly situated to Amani, facing significant challenges. I remember my mom and my dad, they didn't feel comfortable letting us play outside in some of the neighborhoods we lived in because they were concerned about our safety. And I have so many vivid memories from that time in my life, but I also remember resilience. I watched my father overcome his addiction from alcohol and drugs, and he enrolled in MATC, where he earned his accounting degree. And it was after he earned his education that our family moved from the neighborhoods where we couldn't play outside to a neighborhood where my parents finally felt comfortable and felt like we were safe and we were able to play outside. By that time, I was in the third grade. And so I've just dedicated my career and my life to serving the community. If statistics had their way with me, I wouldn't be where I am today. I still see myself in the children who are growing up in our most challenging neighborhoods. And so it takes all of us working together to really change some of the things that we're seeing happening right now. I was particularly interested in Amani because we know the narrative that comes from this neighborhood. And not only did I want to roll up my sleeves and dive into work that's happening to address the narrative, the statistics that we know about the area, but I also wanted to be attached to all the amazing things that people don't talk about. So I certainly believe that on one hand, we can acknowledge the reality, but we have to also tell the whole story of Amani. And so being able to be part of the whole story and share that aspect of the story, the positive things that folks don't talk about, that's what I wanted to be part of. So it means the world to me to be able to work in this community.
Thank you for sharing all of that. And you touched a little bit about this, Marisha, and I just want to end off on this question. What is bringing you joy and light that you see within the community?
I am excited about just really the sense of collaboration here and the momentum. There is so much positive energy, so much love for this community. And I'm excited to be part of that. I think that is where I find my joy. we can turn on the news. I get news alerts on my phone all day long, and it can be very disheartening. But I find my joy in focusing on the amazing residents, the amazing funders, partners, all the positive energy and just the great work that's happening every day. And that's what really keeps me going. What my hope is that folks pay attention to what's happening and engage with us and to support everyone. Everyone has something that they can contribute to the work that's happening here. And so my hope is that everyone can see themselves within the picture in the work that's happening here.
Thank you so much, Marisha, for talking with me on Lake Effect.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate you taking time to chat with me today, and certainly am extremely grateful for the opportunity.
Marisha Harris is the executive director at the Dominican Center. She spoke with Lake Effect's Mallory Chang. Everyone has been impacted in some way by the coronavirus pandemic. The last 18 months have changed many aspects of our lives, and that's especially true for high school and college students. As schooling went virtual, students weren't just missing out on time in the classroom. They were also missing life events like homecoming and graduations. WUWM's Mayan Silver spoke to Anya Ramos, a recent high school graduate and now a Marquette University freshman, about the challenges she's faced adjusting to school and life during a pandemic in our Pandemic Reflection series.
I was a junior in high school when we got shut down, and we never went back in person. I was virtual all through high school, the rest of my high school, and that was definitely difficult. That took a toll on me because I am a very, very social person, busybody. I feel like I really just thrive being around people in person, and so that switch was definitely very, very scary for me. I remember the first day on March 13th, I saw like the news saying that it would be shut down 2 extra weeks for spring break, and I just panicked because I was just like, wow, like 2 weeks, and then, you know, it went on to 12 months plus, so that was like crazy, and I just wasn't expecting that, and it was definitely a toll. But I feel like now it's actually a little weird being back in a situation that is virtually like normal from what I was used to in the past, and so it feels like weirder that like I'm back in person doing classes and things like that, and so it's just, it's again like another weird switch, and it's just crazy how things have changed.
Yeah, I definitely want to ask you about what things are like for you now, but can you sort of explain a little bit about what the so-called, you know, what you were saying the toll was? Like, what were some of the things that were most difficult for you?
Honestly, it would be my mental health. A lot of high school, I just kind of pushed that to the side and just kept busy and just, you know, I just never really paid attention to that and didn't put a lot of effort and time into it and just focused on like community service, focused on school and leadership roles and things like that. And then when I had a moment to myself, I kind of realized, oh, there's a lot of stuff I need to work on for myself. And it just kind of hit me all at once. I found out I have intrusive thought OCD. Well, it's just OCD, but like I like to address it like that because most people don't really understand like the whole concept of OCD, and so intrusive thought is like the best way to explain it to just people who are new into like the mental health world and things like that. So I realized that I had that, and that was a life-changing realization. And I really, like, everything has changed after that. I was kind of out for like 6 months because I didn't really know how to deal with it, and I would consider myself just like not functional for 6 months because I was just really trying to figure out like what was going on. And once I kind of got a hold of that and started healing and like putting in the work and time and making sure that I was researching the right things, going to therapy and things like that, which was all virtual, which was crazy, I started to just figure out ways to just be better and like really, really, like, I mean, truly, like, deep inside better, and like real self-reflection and things that I'm still working on right now, of course, because it doesn't take just 1 year to really meet all the expectations that you want to meet for yourself. But once I figured things out, I kind of thought I wanted to do a little bit of advocacy, and I was chosen to be Youth of the Year for the city of Milwaukee. And so I did my speech on mental health and talking about how things are not, you know, healing isn't linear, and just kind of spreading that message because I experienced it and I wanted to take my own advice finally, and I did. And so I felt comfortable enough to share it with people. And so I think, although like the pandemic really did change a lot for the negative, I think it also helped me in the positive, because then I was able to, like, you know, help people all throughout the state, and it was just crazy. And I remember, like, one of my teachers that I had for the first time virtually, she realized that she had OCD because I wrote a poem on it, and because I have all this time on my hands, so I had to, like, I was able to write things and I was able to do things and, like, really do some self-reflection. But with that is also some dark times, because it's not always just, okay, I'm better. There are times where you feel better and times where you don't. And I think that's something that I learned throughout the pandemic, that there's just bad days and good days. And sometimes those bad days really hit hard. And it's a good life lesson. And I think I learned a lot as a human being during this time.
That's really interesting. I want to ask you how some of the ways that the way society was set up during the pandemic helped you maybe come to terms with and work through and get treatment for and work on, you know, your self-identity and what you want out of life. I want to ask you about that. But really quickly, just a clarification, the intrusive thoughts OCD, what is it in a nutshell to you? Like, what does that mean?
I didn't know what it was for a while. I thought, like, it was just, you know, media kind of shared as just, oh, it's cleaning, like people like to be organized. And so that's why I never really thought I had that, because I was not an organized person. But then I realized it's more of like irrational thinking, and it has nothing to do with being clean. It's like, you know, it's really your worst fears and things that you don't want to become that manifest into something, and you can't let go of that thought. And people who suffer from that just really feel like there's some things that are like very guilt-heavy type of thoughts, because you think, oh, well, because I'm thinking this, it must be true. And so then you keep ruminating on it, and the compulsions are often mental. And so a lot of times we see compulsions being, oh, like they wash their hands. But sometimes compulsions can be avoiding an entire person or trying to get rid of the thought. And that can be really confusing to try to navigate through. And that's why I remember I was just kind of in a loop of just doing those mental compulsions and didn't really know that I was doing them. And so that's the debilitating part, because it does take sometimes like your highest values or the things that you value most and can make them seem way worse than they are. And a lot of the times people don't realize that it's definitely like a mood thing and it's an anxiety thing. So it's like a cycle of just like anger, sadness, and then like real panic attack and inducing anxiety. And so it can be very, 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 very difficult to deal with. But I think with more information coming out about it and more truth about it, a lot more people are going to be able to get help. And I want to be a part of that, definitely, that change for sure.
And I want to unpack some of your journey over the pandemic of you getting help and working through it and getting to a better place with it. So Anya, like, you discovered this about yourself. First of all, how was that a relief to kind of know that it's something and it's something you can get help for? And then how did the way things were set up in the pandemic help you move forward with that?
So I think the initial realization was not that much of a relief at first. It was definitely very scary, because when I realized what it was, I realized, oh, like, this isn't just like a phase of life. Like, this isn't just like a phase because of like a situation. Because a lot of the times, like, I remember I was feeling very, very anxious, and like my parents would be like, oh, it's just because of like what's going on right now, and like it's just a very stressful situation. And so like I kept telling myself, oh yeah, it is true. But then when I realized, like, oh wow, so this isn't just gonna go away when things get better. Like, this is lifelong. This is a lifelong condition that I have to deal with. And it was really difficult to understand. And when I started to find sources and resources of people that have gone through this journey and are relatively healed from it, it brought some clarity. And I realized that, like, okay, like, their whole life didn't necessarily change. Like, obviously, the way that they live definitely does. But they're the same person, and they're still successful, and they're still doing what they want to do, and, you know, still having families, still being happy as possible and content with their life. But there's a lot of work that needs to be put into it. I was thinking of it kind of like, okay, if I had broken my leg or had a really bad accident, like, you have to put in the work daily to get better. And so that's how I started to think about it. And that's when the relief started to come, when I realized, like, and just accepted it as a part of me and as part of my identity, and not as a defining feature, but as something that is a part of me now. And I have to accept it, otherwise I'll never fully try to get better.
How did the way society was set up during the pandemic, or the environment that you were in the pandemic, contribute to your well-being or your path towards well-being?
It honestly made it way more accessible for me to just work on myself, because if I was in a situation like I am right now, full-time in school, in like on campus, or like if I was in that, like in high school on campus doing all the extracurricular activities and things like that, and, you know, driving around, like coming back home at like 8:30 at night, like that, I just would not have been able to have the time. Like, I would have forced myself, like I did in my, the rest of, like earlier high school years, to just not focus on it. Like, it's not an issue because I have better things to do in my head, you know?
And when you're thinking back on like the year and a half that you spent, obviously this was a big component of it. You know, discovering you have a diagnosis and then going through the therapy, working on it, finding other people like you, finding how it manifests in the world. What were some lessons you took away from that, or wisdoms that you can share with other people about that?
Well, okay, I have a few. I think the main one is that healing in any aspect is not going to be linear at all. I think a lot of us, I know I did, was just thinking, you know, you're sad or something bad happens, then you get better, and then you're just better. But I realized even a couple months ago that, like, okay, it was really bad in the beginning of the pandemic around March, May, and then I got better around December, February, you know, the spring, winter time. I was just a lot better, and I felt, okay, I'm healed. And so I just stopped working on it. And then May came again, and something like that, it just started to consume me a little bit more, and I kind of forgot how to work on it. It's like, there are going to be moments in my life where it's going to be more difficult to manage this OCD, and then there's going to be moments where it's almost like it's never there, but that doesn't mean I need to stop working on it. And this applies to every aspect of my life, even in relationships. Like, you have a good time in your relationship with family, friends, partners, and you think, okay, we're really good right now, so let's stop communicating. Let's stop working on the things that we were working on when we were in a bad place in our relationship. And then all of a sudden, all these bad things happen, a lot of arguments and things like that. And you're just like, oh, well, I don't really know. How were we good in the first place? And so I think linear, like the idea that like anything, happiness, contentness, relationships, healing, anything is linear, is just something I learned that is not true. And something that I think brought a lot of peace to my life is because I realized, like, okay, I can work on myself forever.
Anya Ramos, thank you so much. Keep up doing what you're doing. You're amazing. Thanks for talking to us.
Thank you for having me so much. Yes.
Anya Ramos is a 2021 Boys and Girls Club of Greater Milwaukee and Bally Sports Wisconsin State Youth of the Year. She's also a Marquette University freshman. She spoke to WUWM's Mayon Silver as a part of our Pandemic Reflection series. You can find more from the series at WUWM.com, including a conversation with presiding judge of the Milwaukee Municipal Courts, Derek Mosley, on his experience battling COVID-19. Coming up in about 10 minutes, Milwaukee Records' Matt Wild will talk about some of the best new songs from local musicians for this month's Milwaukee Music Roundup. But first, we'll speak with a biologist who rediscovered the rare green violet in Wisconsin, a wildflower that hasn't been seen in the state for more than 50 years. That's coming up on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. You're listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. May 5th is a day that Ryan O'Connor will never forget. It started as a regular day on the job for the conservation biologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. O'Connor was surveying one of the state's nearly 700 natural areas when he spotted something that caught his eye. It turned out to be the rare green violet, a species that hasn't been seen in Wisconsin in more than 50 years. O'Connor spoke to WUWM's environmental reporter Susan Bentz in July about the significance of the discovery. He begins by describing the work he was doing when he found the green violet.
We walk through the property and we take notes on what we see. So we're looking for rare species in particular. We're looking to, in particular, if there are species that were documented there previously, we're looking to update those, see if we can find them again, see if they're still there, what the population size is, what the threats are to those rare species. But we're also looking for trying to assess the quality of the entire community or the ecosystem. So in this case, it was a community we refer to as a southern mesic forest, which is often dominated by sugar maple and red oak and basswood. And in the spring, notable for their carpet of spring ephemeral wildflowers. So people might be familiar with things like trillium or Dutchman's breeches, things of that nature. And embedded within that matrix, that's where I looked up and saw an odd plant and knew it was different, and it turned out to be green violet.
And it was last sighted in the state in 1958, is that right?
The last record we have of its sighting was 1958 in Grant County, and it had been looked for before in Grant County at that location, but the location had been fairly compromised by grazing in the woods by cattle and was presumed to be gone from the state. People had looked in surrounding ravines and things like that, but for it to be, for green violet to be rediscovered at all was a really big deal, but also because it was 200 miles further north than it had been found in the past. So it really speaks to the importance of getting out and just spending time in the woods and prairies and wetlands and looking for these rare species that we think are gone, as well as other rare species that we know are maybe not quite so extremely rare in the state. But the more we look, the more we find.
So what does it take? I mean, just give an example of what it takes for that plant to survive. I read just in passing the importance of ants to the system.
Yeah, it's a really interesting plant. It comes up in the early spring, and it requires a particularly rich mesic woods habitat. So it needs like full shade. It will do best, you know, under really large trees. So forests that are, you know, older forests, old growth like type conditions might not be exclusively limited to that, but it's pollinated. And then the seeds have these little sugary bodies on them that are collected by ants, and then the ants carry them off to their burrows where they will then later germinate. But it also speaks to the fact that, like, then you need an intact, like, ant community. And I, you know, we know virtually nothing about ants, at least I do, but we know that that's an important part of the ecosystem for this plant. And for other species like that, too. Trilliums are known to be dependent on ants, certain species of violet, same thing. But you need an intact, like, woodlot, you know, or ideally a whole larger ecosystem to support all of the functioning that any individual species need to survive.
There's so much to this. Your discovery points to, you know, how fragile our ecosystems are. There's a lot that can be found in state natural areas, but they're having a harder time surviving. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. There are a lot of what we refer to as environmental stressors on state natural areas, on all sorts of public properties, private properties that also affect rare species. So not just green violet, but there's over 300 rare plants that are listed in the state. And, you know, there a lot of them are endangered. A lot of people know about habitat loss, which is certainly true over the grand scheme of time. But right now, some of the other top stressors are invasive species, you know, so for green violet and other things of mesic woods, that would include garlic mustard. But it also includes invasive earthworms, like jumping worms a lot of people have heard of, but there's all earthworms are actually non-native to the state, and so that's impacting other species in that ecosystem. In other systems, things affecting rare species are a lack of prescribed fire. So all of our prairie and savanna species evolved with this over thousands of years, over millennia, and you know, in order to protect our cities and farms and towns and houses, you know, we've really suppressed fires. And now there's a big push to try to get more fire back on the landscape. But that's a very complicated process. But, you know, the places where you tend to find these rare species are the sites that have been managed with fire, where invasive species have been controlled, either by the state, or by private landowners, by volunteer groups that go out and remove garlic mustard from the woods, that join nonprofit organizations to remove brush from a prairie, and all those things help tremendously. Rare plants and all of our common species too survive.
Where does the site that you found the violet, is that a managed area? Are invasive species an issue, a major issue there?
Yeah, the site where green violet was found was particularly high quality, or what we would say high ecological integrity, precisely because it hasn't been grazed, that there weren't very, very few invasive species present. And I think that's one of the reasons why it is persisting there, because it isn't facing a lot of the same stressors that are in sites that are more impacted by these things.
If you would describe a bit again about this unusual plant, about the flower, the look of the flower, and is this among, or is this like the top find of your career thus far?
Yeah, I think it'd probably be the top find of my career so far. You know, certainly rare species are discovered, you know, with some frequency. And I would even say that species are, you know, that are thought to be lost, but then are rediscovered. You know, it happens maybe once a decade even. You know, it's especially the more people you have out in the woods, you know, whether they're professional biologists or whether they're amateur people just botanizing or looking for bees and butterflies and birds. You had asked about to describe green violet in that day a little bit. It is, it's a really interesting plant because it grew in a big clump. And so I saw it from a fair ways away and walked up to it, immediately knew it was different. And the scientific name of green violet is Hybanthus, which is the genus, and the species is concolor. Concolor means the same color. And so, you know, in this case, like the flowers are basically green, the leaves are green, both the flower petals and the sepals are green. So everything is kind of all the same color. So it doesn't actually like jump out at you from the, like a colorful wildflower standpoint. The whole plant is probably 8 to 12 inches tall. But the flower is very, very small. When I saw it, it was still fairly young, you know, about the size of like the head of a pushpin. Maybe so fairly small, but the flower is really unique in that it hangs underneath the leaves. You know, we're used to things that you know, like might grow up like a trillium or a daylily and have a nice big flower kind of on top that's elevated, but these are very tall and hidden and kind of hang underneath the leaves. And so that combination of the way the leaves were, the shape of the leaf and the flower hanging under them, was really diagnostic. And I took a bunch of pictures. I realized right away that was really significant. And I even teared up a little bit, just because it was, the site is so rare, so beautiful, but also we have this incredible responsibility to care for these species. But also, like, these things are out there and we need more people getting out there, but somehow I was the one that had the fortune of being able to discover it, and that just felt really special. So yeah, definitely kind of the find of a career.
So I'm tempted to ask about your daughter, because of course that's such a cool story, but does she feel somewhat, you know, responsible for helping her dad, you know, zero in on this rare find?
Yeah, so my daughter gave me this note before I left. It was my first kind of long series of overnight trips on the state, and she gave me a note as I was walking out the door, kind of handwritten, you know, and she's in kindergarten, so the idea of writing handwritten notes is sort of like kind of new and fresh to her. But it said, "Dear Dad, I hope you find lots of rare stuff." And so she felt, you know, pleased to give me the note, but when I texted and called back, you know, later in the week and said, like, honey, your note worked. I found this really rare thing. She felt really, like, a deep sense of pride. So I told her she had a hand in giving me this good luck charm to help me find this rare plant.
Ryan O'Connor is an ecologist and inventory coordinator with the Wisconsin DNR. He spoke to WUWM environmental reporter Susan Bentz in July. To see pictures of the green violet, you can visit WUWM.com. We'll take a short break and then hear some new songs from local musicians in this month's Milwaukee Music Roundup. That's next on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. You're listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. It's fall in Milwaukee, but you wouldn't know it by how the music scene has been heating up. Venues around the city remain open with some COVID-19 restrictions, and festivals and shows have continued to bring out big crowds. That's good news for Milwaukee music lover Matt Wild. He's one of the co-founders of Milwaukee Record, which describes itself as an online source for music, culture, and gentle sarcasm. Every month, Wild joins Lake Effect's Joy Powers to share a sample of what he's been listening to for the Milwaukee Music Roundup.
So we have a few songs. Actually, I don't think I know most of these artists, but the first artist, I know at least half of them. So it's a couple of local folks.
This is a great pairing of two artists who I think on paper maybe wouldn't make a whole lot of sense. But once you put them together, it's like, oh, wow, this works really well together, and I really like the results. The two artists we're talking about are Vincent Van Great and Amanda Huff. Now, Vincent Van Great has been around for a couple of years. He is a rapper. He's a producer. He is terrific. I've always loved him. I've always loved his live shows. He plays with a live band oftentimes. The name of the band is Ninja Sauce. And he just does like a really great, upbeat, fun show. Amanda Huff, on the other hand, she's been around for a number of years and is kind of a solo artist. She is in a recent group that she formed called You Win, which I believe we've talked about on the show before. And, you know, with Amanda, it's really about her voice. She has such a distinctive, very idiosyncratic and very emotive voice. She has just one of those voices that she really uses like an instrument. So Vincent Van Great and Amanda Huff got together and they recorded a record that they call Troublemakers, which is a fun kind of name for what is a fun kind of record. And the song we're going to be listening to today is, I think, one of the most fun of them all. It's called Double Strawberry Plush. It's just this kind of like really flirty and fun song about, you know, people trying to hook up, and it does so in like, I think, a very positive and enjoyable way. It's not creepy. It's not like, ugh, I don't want to hear about this, but it's just it's fun and it's flirty and it's what it should be, you know, right? And they mix so well together. Amanda's voice and Vincent Van Great's voice as well, a terrific singer, and it just makes for a great record. This record, I think, is leading up to another Vincent Van Great record called Ladies Please, which kind of, he has said, has a similar vibe to this. So look forward to that. And in the meantime, enjoy Vincent Van Great and Amanda Huff with Double Strawberry Plush.
This is yum yum. Damn, baby girl, got it going on. I just want your love, don't leave me on.
That's Double Strawberry Plush by Amanda Huff and Vincent Van Great. The next song we're going to be looking at, I would describe it as, I guess, alternative pop music. I will say it is very aptly titled, not just because of the lyrics, but also the feel of the song.
This is the latest release from Milwaukee group La Resorts, L'Resorts. I believe we've talked about them on this show before. And what's really fascinating about La Resorts is that they put out this, I mean, they have a very specific sound. It is very, I think they kind of call themselves tropical pop. There's a lot of marimbas going on. And the name of this record is called Vacation, very aptly named. It's perfect music for sitting out in the sun and maybe enjoying a bubbly beverage and just soaking up the rays. What's fascinating about La Resorts, however, is that it seems like most of their releases are released in the fall and winter. I don't know. At this point, I think it's almost got to be a choice, and I kind of like it. If you really want to extend your summertime season, here comes La Resorts every few years with a tropical, sunny album that they release in like October or November. They do Christmas albums, which also sound like this. I just love the incongruity there.
Maybe the thought is that this is the time of year that you'll actually be going to a resort.
Oh, this could be. I think you may have cracked the code here. This I'll have to talk to the band. That may be it. The band, I should say, is led by Vinny Kircher and Martha Cannon. We talked about Vincent Van Great and Amanda Huff kind of being this unlikely pair on paper. Here's another pair that on paper maybe wouldn't make a whole lot of sense. Vinny is from a Milwaukee legendary band, garage rock band Jail. Martha is from her own kind of long-running solo project called Lady Cannon. And they got together a few years ago as a songwriting and singing duo, and they both have very distinctive voices that, again, you wouldn't think would, work so well together, but I think they really do. And I've really been enjoying all the records they've been putting out over the last few years. And this latest one, Vacation, I think is probably their strongest. It has really some of their sharpest songwriting. And we'll hear it here in the song we're going to listen to. It is aptly titled Bubbles.
Was Bubbles by La Resorts? La Resorts? I'm trying to see how an L would go into the...
It's fun to say and fun to mispronounce, yeah.
So the next song we're going to be looking at is from a group I wasn't familiar with and a very different vibe from the first two songs.
Absolutely. One of the things that I've really been enjoying with Milwaukee Record lately is we started doing, once again, our halftime shows for the Green Bay Packers games, where we all get together at the Cactus Club every Sunday or whatever it is, watch the Packers game together, and then during halftime, we'll have a band or an artist play a few songs, maybe, 10, 15 minutes or so. This past Sunday, we had Lady Bird on, who is the group we're going to be listening to. So just a couple days ago, and Lady Bird, wow, it is a brand new group, but boy, oh boy, did they bring in the folks. The Cactus Club was packed, and they really brought the house down. And Lady Bird is led by, I believe, another artist we've talked about. His name is Pete Freeman. And Pete has, in the past, I don't want to call them novelty tunes necessarily, but he's done these kind of very funny, very goofy songs. He wrote a song about Front Row Amy, the big Brewers super fan. He wrote a song when Vogue wrote a big glowing article about Milwaukee and everyone got all excited about it. Pete wrote a song saying, hey, don't come here. It's actually terrible. Let's keep Milwaukee a secret. Move to Chicago instead. That's the kind of thing that Pete has done. And now he's finally put together like a group that he calls Ladybird. He is the lead singer. And just like his other stuff, it is kind of this, you know, country flavored rock and roll. And what I like about this, and I mean this in the best possible way, it goes down so easy. Pete has a great voice. There is nothing, you know, fancy or complicated here. It is just solid songwriting and solid hooks and, I don't know, just a great kind of country rock and roll vibe. The new group led by Pete is called Ladybird. They put out their debut record just a week or so ago. It is called Introducing. And the song we're going to be listening to is just kind of a song about enjoying the open road and enjoying the company of others. I think that's something we could all kind of relate to these days. And the song is called Zoomer.
So I crack my fifth can and I scream, born to run, absolutely no one at all. And a wise man once said that a dream needs gasoline, and the price is right, but the clock's questioning from the wall. And the laughing faces I know make me feel free.
Zoomer by Ladybird. Now, the final song we're going to be looking at, I think the name of the band is pretty interesting and perhaps very appropriate given the little depictions I saw on their album cover. The song itself, to me, feels very 90s.
It's interesting you say that because this band has been around since even before the 90s. They have their kind of genesis in the early to mid 80s, really. The band is Exposed Foreheads. That is the letter X posed with the numeral 4 heads. And Exposed Foreheads, like I say, have been around for a long, long time, since really the 80s. And they are led by a fellow named Mark G.E. Now, longtime Milwaukeeans will remember Mark. He was behind another kind of 80s and 90s, was a kind of a sketch comedy troupe called Joy Farm. And they did a lot of videos and did a lot of sketch comedy back in the day. And Exposed Foreheads was always like their band, kind of the band that went along with everything. And they put out a lot of music in, like I said, the 80s and 90s. And then for a long time, they kind of were quiet. And then it wasn't until maybe 2012, 2015 that they started putting out new music again. And since then, I've put out, I don't know, 4 or 5 new records. What I like about Exposed Foreheads, other than the fact that it's just, I always admire people that are just, you know, keep going. Like, you know, we've been doing this for 25 years. We're just going to keep doing it. Great. I love that. I also love that it's kind of like what you hear is what you get. This is a band that if you like Devo, you're going to love this band. If you like kind of cheesy sci-fi, that whole kind of vibe, you're going to like Exposed Foreheads. So this is from their latest record. The record is called Planet A-Go-Go. And the name of the song is Switch In Go.
That was Switch and Go by Exposed Foreheads. Now, you mentioned you've been doing these events over the Cactus Club for the halftime show. What else do you have going on this fall?
It's kind of fun. Finally, here at Milwaukee Record, we're ramping up with a lot of these live events that we, you know, have not done in a year and a half. We're doing the Cactus Club shows. We're doing our monthly movie screenings at the Avalon Theater, where we just pick some old random movie that we want to watch, and we watch it at the Avalon once a month. We're doing a midweek music series at Crafty Cow in Tosa. So it's nice to be doing all these live events again, which, you know, were such a big part of what we did pre-pandemic. So it's nice, finally, you know, 8,000 years later, to be finally doing this stuff again. And it feels just like Milwaukee in general is kind of doing the same thing. This fall, my goodness. I mean, when you think of Milwaukee, you oftentimes think of summer festivals. But wow, the number of like fall festivals that have been popping up in the last few weeks and will be popping up through like the rest of October. I mean, it's just kind of stunning. It's been really, really exciting and kind of overwhelming, especially after like a year and a half of not doing a whole lot. So I guess it's a good problem to have right now, like having such, you know, a huge amount of choices between all this other stuff and the stuff that we're doing in Milwaukee Records. So it's a good time to be in Milwaukee right now.
For sure. Well, Matt, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and sharing these songs.
Thanks for having me.
Matt Wild is the co-founder of Milwaukee Record. Every month he publishes his Milwaukee Music Roundup and shares a few of those songs with Lake Effect's Joy Powers. You can find their previous conversations at WUWM.com. And that's Lake Effect for today. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Tomorrow on the show, we'll learn about the new UW Transdisciplinary Center for Research in Psychoactive Substances. Plus, learn about the spread of ransomware attacks and how they're threatening personal cybersecurity. That's tomorrow at noon on Lake Effect, right here on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.